Okay, Elliot, to start off today's podcast, which, by the way, we are recording on Saturday. You may be listening to this on probably the Wednesday, not sure, but this is being recorded on Saturday afternoon. And I'm going to reprise an old role I used to
have. Can I just explain why it's being recorded on Saturday afternoon first?
I wasn't sure whether you wanted to, but please go ahead.
I'm taking the family on a spring break vacation. I take one Wednesday game off a year, and it's usually right before the playoffs. So this is my fault. If you are upset about this being recorded early, you can blame me.
Okay, hold on. Emil, pause the podcast here for a second. This is your boy Jeff Merrick talking to you. This is March 14th. This is Wednesday. I've just finished doing Hockey Central at noon with Kiprios and McLean, and we have to insert this into the podcast. Elliot has no idea that I'm doing this, but here we go. Blame is an interesting word right now for Elliot Friedman, and here's why. Let's rewind to Monday. Sportsnet 960 in Calgary. Elliot Friedman is in studio with the big show, Rob Kerr and Pat Steinberg. Listen to this.
Elliot Friedman from Sportsnet and the 31 Thoughts podcast, which is brought to you by GMC Canada, correct?
That is correct,
and,
yes.
And when is that, as the kids like to say, drop?
This one will be dropping on Wednesday. You know, I'm on vacation this week, but Jeff and I taped one on Saturday that will come out on Wednesday.
Your dedication, we should talk about that, because your family is not here right now, and you are rejoining them because you were with them. I thought they were in Disneyland. They're not. They're in Disney World.
Yes,
so
yes.
So you came from Florida to Calgary and are now returning to Florida.
Yeah, I dropped my wife and son off at Disney World on yesterday morning.
Right.
We took a 6 a.m. flight from Toronto yesterday, and then I flew here in the afternoon, and I'm going back tonight. But this is, I want to explain this. The Flames asked me to come out and be part of this several months ago, which I happily said yes. I'm glad to do things like this. Any kind of charity event, I'm almost always in on if I can be. And then I kind of forgot about it, and I booked the vacation. And, you know, we'll see if there's divorce papers waiting for me tomorrow. But the fact is, you know, you make a commitment, you stay with the commitment.
Well, it's pretty incredible. What I didn't understand was that you left Toronto, went to Florida.
Yes.
Drove them to the happiest place on earth.
Yes.
Drove back and flew here.
Yes.
Could you not have sent them and flown from Toronto here?
We thought about it. My son's six. Mm-hmm. He's a happy, active guy. Like,
is this the first time to Disney World for him?
We went for a day once, but I don't think he remembers it. Like, this is the first extended trip.
Okay.
And, you know, my little guy, I love him. He's a handful.
Yep.
So I just said, you know what? I have a choice here. I'm already making this really hard on my wife. Do I want to make it even harder, or do I want to try to get some husband of the year points at a time where I'm really losing them?
That's
what I was doing.
That's pretty smart.
Yeah.
Do you get direct from Calgary to Orlando?
No.
Yeah. So it's not like we're not talking about Regina to Calgary here. That's a little bit of a it's a little bit of a jump.
But like
too.
I said, this is nobody's fault but my own. You know what? I had a great time here today. It was the Starlight Flames luncheon.
Yeah.
Like, they did a great job. You know, I know it's not easy because of what happened last night.
Yeah.
But the fact is, I saw a number of people taking pictures with players and coaches, and I think everybody understood that this is important, and they were very gracious. And I thought it was a great event. I really had a good time.
Oh, that's juicy. Oh, that's good. Okay, back to the podcast now.
And I'm used to being blamed for just about everything, so I'm good with that.
If any of the information you're hearing on this podcast is dated and you say to yourself, these guys don't know their butt from page six, it's because Elliot is making us do this on Saturday afternoon.
And there's no 31 Thoughts blog this week either.
A half miler.
I know. I really am a half miler. I am mailing this weekend.
This is a lick the envelope week around 31 Thoughts. Okay, so an old role I used to have on Hockey Night in Canada was a tiny little feature which ran a cozy 30 seconds, and then it was either talk over scenic or get it back to Ron, the iDesk.
Yes.
Where I was known for reading tweets.
Yes.
So today, Elliot, to start the podcast, I'm reading tweets. Okay, this is from March the 8th. And someone just tweaked me to this on Twitter, and it's been buried in my thread, so I apologize for not reading this person's name or giving him acknowledgement for pointing me to this.
Mm-hmm.
This is a thread by Brent Johnson, okay, former NHL netminder, at JohnnyGoalie12. It may take a while, so put your feet up and enjoy. Brent Johnson, March 8th. Opinion. For those concerned, Braden Holtby is an excellent top-tiered NHL starting goalie. One thing I've been saying for some time now is that in today's game, with the incredible speed, pace, and chaos, starting goalies get more fatigued than ever before. The constant pressure of having to be fully prepared night in and night out has a wearing effect on one's body and mind. Since 13-14, Braden has started 298 games, approximately 17,800 minutes. It's a hell of a lot of time. I don't care who you are. What I'm saying is there are boundaries for what a person's body and mind can endure. Note, it's also more noticeable when a goalie is off his game in comparison to a forward or defenseman. Mid-season fatigue happens to goalies all over the league, not just here in D.C. A goalie will rarely tell a reporter that they are exhausted or express this sentiment with the coach when they are asked. They will just keep strumming along because that's what they are expected to do. Some starting goalies get away with playing subpar games down the stretch because the respective teams get the job done in front of them. Therefore, from the outside, the goalie keeps winning and the people in power keep them playing and playing. Getting back to Braden, who in the past few years has changed his game for the better, I might add, from that of a radical game to a more efficient and detailed game. As an aside, I'm guessing that's Mitch Korn.
Mm-hmm.
But in the past month or so, I've seen him make mistakes that I haven't seen him make all season. His puck handling and depth through traffic, or lack thereof, have not always been as sharp as they were in December, which leads me to believe that he may very well be low on petrol. Either this can put stress on his confidence and self-reliance. If what I've read is correct, and Coach Trotz is looking to go with the very capable Grubauer for a little more down the stretch, it is all positive. It's positive for Holtby, for Grubauer, and the Caps heading into the playoff race. There are reports out there that Andrei Vasilevskiy, 55 starts and counting, is tired, and I'm not surprised. Many former cohorts of mine have expressed to me the feeling of being totally drained numerous times throughout my career, sometimes looking totally deflated doing so. Don't get me wrong, I'm not saying it's easy to be a forward or a D-man, because I'm not. It's just a totally different mentality. A goalie has to be locked in for 60-plus minutes, following the puck every square inch on the ice surface. Note, a goalie, especially during the peak of his career, doesn't just forget how to stop a puck. The body is just reacting in unusual ways because the mind is weary. Coaches around the league should take notice when they start to see a pattern of uneven play. If the coaching staff, almost done, Elliot, if the coaching staff can afford to manage their tenders, especially if you have two capable goalies, and most do throughout the season, their squad will be better for it in the long run. The season is a marathon, not a sprint. You don't win anything in December or January. In closing, it does take an army to win in this great game of ours, but for the Capitals, a healthy and rested Braden Holtby can only help them in their playoff bid. That is former NHL netminder, still living in D.C., Brent Johnson.
Okay, a couple of things jumped to mind listening to that. Number one, you never got that much time on the iDesk. Like, you could never have read all of those tweets.
Mike Dodson, my producer, would have been screaming at me by about the third tweet.
And secondly, you know, Brent Johnson's a really smart guy. You could tell that when he played. It sounds like he's trying to talk a lot of people off a ledge, particularly Caps fans, with that series of tweets.
For sure.
And, you know, he's totally right. And the thing is that we are so quick to react. He sucks. He's good. He sucks. He sucks. He sucks. Oh, he's good now. He's back to being good. He's excellent. Oh, he sucks again. That's the way we are. We're very reactive to the last thing that anybody does. Mm-hmm. There's very little acceptance for body of work. There's very little acceptance for a lot of different things. A guy can have an off night. A guy can be going great and it just doesn't happen for him. Whatever. There's just not a lot of acceptance for poor performance. But, you know, I think the thing is that I remember earlier this year when Lundqvist was really struggling and when Carey Price was really struggling, there were a number of people who came to me and said, you look at last year in New York, they gave Antti Raanta four consecutive starts.
And including a back-to-back, I think.
And everybody was like, oh, my God, like Lundqvist is done. Yep. And it just turned out he needed a rest. Carey Price, there have been times where they gave him a rest. Now, some of that's been injury, but generally they have given him rest. There is nothing wrong with telling a goalie, you are going to sit for three or four games. We're going to get back on the details in practice. Mm-hmm. And then we are going to reset with you.
Pause on that. Here's the problem. In hockey, I would imagine in other sports as well, Frege, fatigue is associated with softness. if you're tired, you can't handle it. You're too soft, either physically soft, so you can't handle the strain that your body has to go through, or mentally soft because you can't just power through it.
You know, I think that's changing.
There is still that association, though.
I think that is changing. Look, we just had a week this week where in the NBA, DeMar DeRozan came public with his talk about battling mental health, and Kevin Love saw that. He wrote a big Players Tribune piece about his panic attacks, and I do think 20 or 30 years ago, it would have been shut the F up and just play, and people would have said, you know, men are men, and I walked up the hill both ways to school and stuff like that. I do think it's changing. Now, there's some really smart people out there who wonder if we've come too far the other way, but the fact is I do think the attitudes are changing on exhaustion and rest. Like, look at all these teams now. The Vancouver Canucks were one of the first teams to use sleep doctors a decade ago, and now almost everybody, especially on the West Coast, is using them. What are teams doing now? They're doing sports science with when are the optimal times to practice and not practice, and when is a guy tired. I think the days of saying that fatigue is not a factor and mental strength is not a factor, honestly, Jeff, I think only in the most old school of old school beliefs is that still a fact.
But you don't see that still in hockey places? I certainly do.
No, I just
man up and go and play. Oh, you're a little bit sleepy? Yeah, have a nap.
And you know what? I think there is some of that, but I think it's changing. The area where I believe the firmest test is the playoffs. Because I do think in the playoffs it's still the old school mentality. Like, we need you. You got to go. But I do think in the regular season, particularly when it comes to practicing, I think teams have more of an understanding than ever that if you want to blow off a practice, you can blow off a practice.
You know, one of the interesting things that Johnson writes about in this tweet thread is how he talks about how the incredible speed and pace of the game fatigues goaltenders than more than ever before. And this isn't just true of sports. I mean, the speed of life is faster than it's ever been before. I mean, you and I are doing a podcast right now, and I'm on my laptop, and you're on your iPhone, right? We all do a whole lot of things
at the same time.
And you have to wonder, like, how fast is too fast? Or are we at a point now where, yeah, it's a little bit too fast, but we are, you know, I'm going to get into singularity theory here in a second if I don't calm down. But, I mean, are we getting to a point now where we're in that awkward transition phase? And, yes, it is too fast, but we are evolving to a place where our bodies and minds can handle it, and this is just that speed bump that we have to go over. Like, I've always wondered about this because I used to watch – like you did, like we all did, anyone listening to this podcast right now.
Yep.
As a kid, I remember watching hockey, and, you know, this is the era of the 1970s Montreal Canadiens. And I remember thinking to myself, holy smokes, these guys are fast. I can't imagine hockey being played any faster. Go back and watch those games. Those games are so slow.
I love watching the goalies.
It's
hilarious.
Goalies didn't really learn how to play hockey until the last 20 years, really. But, I mean, that's for another conversation. But the speed of it is overwhelming right now.
Yes.
And you only get that when you look at the context of, you look at games 20 years ago, 30 years ago, and 40 years ago. And that's something that I hadn't considered about goaltenders. And just tracking pucks for a full 60 minutes, moving that quickly, and having to process that amount of information instantly, that's got to mentally wear on you.
One of the things for our business, too, is I've done some studies into the brain. Like, just, you know, I used to cover a few stories about concussions, and you learn a lot about the way that the brain is wired, right? And when you're seeking for information or you get new information, your brain gets excited by that. So you begin to crave it. It's like a drug. Like, we joked at the beginning about me going on vacation next week. You know, I'm 47 now. When I was 25, actually, I think I was 23 at the time, I once worked 121 consecutive days at the Fan. It was like nothing. I could do it. But now I actually kind of need that vacation to reset and relax. And with the job we do, like, the one thing I like about Rogers is from July 2nd to Labor Day, they tell me to get lost.
Yeah.
But
I'm saying.
But from Labor Day to July 1st, you know, Jeff, we're on the clock.
Those I'm on a stretch now of 11 days in a row.
11 days in a row?
Including two out of town.
Well, you know,
but that's fine. I get
it. Yeah,
we
signed up for this.
Summer's going to come, and that's going to be cool.
It's like Godfather 2, Hyman Roth. This is the life we've chosen.
This is the career we've chosen?
The business.
The business we've chosen.
This is the business we've chosen.
That's right.
So I'm not whining about it, but I do recognize that
I signed up for this. This is what I'm in for. I know it, but I do need a bit more of a reset periodically than I used to. Because I'm an old geezer at 47 now.
Ever read any Norman Doidge? Does that name resonate with
no.
you? The brain that changes itself?
No.
You always suggest books to me if yeah. you're interested in neuroplasticity. That's one that you should have on your shelf. Okay, we're going to pause on that. A special edition of 31 Thoughts, the podcast, the All Ask 31 edition. We'll explain in a moment. Welcome to the 31 Thoughts podcast, brought to you by the all-new 2018 GMC Terrain.
Matthew Barzell, this is the 31 Thoughts podcast with Jeff Merrick and Elliot Friedman. Give it a listen.
You know what's interesting? And that, by the way, thanks to Matt Barzell there for the opening. I bet if we're still doing this podcast in 5 years and Barzell's doing the opening like that for us, I'm guessing it's a lot different as he gets more comfortable.
You know what? I think it's interesting. When I taped the interview with him in Vancouver that aired last Saturday, one of the things that he did, a couple times we just stopped the interview and he was like, is this good? Is this good? Is it okay?
That's him. He's a really thoughtful guy.
And he just wants, you know, he just wants to come across looking right, I guess. You're concerned about all the way that you get presented. I'll tell you, his father, Mike, who played in the BC Junior League with Brett Hull, they were teammates. He told me a pretty interesting story and Barzell remembered it when I brought it up. And he said that I asked him, like, what was your biggest memory of Matthew as a player growing up? And, you know, he said that I remember there was a day he was playing like spring summer hockey.
Mm-hmm.
And one day he was riding his bike and he said, Dad, you know, I really want to stay riding my bike and I don't want to go practice hockey or to play hockey today. And Mike initially said, no, you're going. And then he thought about it for 5-10 minutes. And he said, like, what am I doing? Like, what am I doing? I'm going to make my kid hate hockey. So he went back to him and said, Matthew, you know, if you really feel like riding your bike today, you know, you can do it. And he said he always remembered that because he said that is the role I felt I had to have as the parent.
Yeah.
The parent who supported the kid playing hockey because he wanted to do it, not because he was being forced to do it.
There is only a handful of players in the NHL that most people will pay to watch play. You know, there's Sidney and there's Connor McDavid and Alex Ovechkin. Like, there's only a handful of guys. For me, Matthew Barzell's already on that list.
He's going to rise.
Already on that list.
And he's going to rise. And, you know, like, I think you and I both agree that the John Tavares preference is to re-sign in New York with the Islanders.
Mm-hmm.
But if he doesn't, Barzell's going to get thrown under the spotlight. And I think on the ice he can handle it, but off the ice, it's a lot to ask. And I remember when Gar Snow drafted John Tavares, their first golf tournament they had after John Tavares got drafted by the Islanders, the guy on the poster was Josh Bailey. And I said, you know, why? Why'd you do that? And he goes, I think it's too much. You know, I think we're asking Johnny to be the savior of the franchise, and I think there's a limit to what you can ask a guy to do.
This is the opposite of the Sean Stamkos campaign.
Yes. You know, so I remember that they did that, and I think whatever happens in New York, if it turns out that Tavares goes and Barzell becomes the face, I think there'll be people there who will say, we have to be very careful with how we do this.
You know, I remember talking to someone at Memorial Cup last year in Windsor from the Western Hockey League about Barzell. And he said to me, and this is, you know, no disrespect, like, you know, Keegan Kolasar and Ryan Gropp and those types of players for the Thunderbirds. But he said to me, he said, you know what, Barzell's great. And he may be the best playmaker in the entire CHL right now, but wait till he plays with better players.
Yeah.
Like, you know those guys that are able to take their game to the next level and really fast once they're around better players in that environment? He said, don't be surprised if this guy rips up the NHL next year.
Well, he's playing with Eberle and Beauvillier, and he looks fantastic.
Looks great. And, yeah, he is on that handful of guys that I would pay to watch play. And that's a pretty small list. Okay, so for this week's edition of the 31 Thoughts podcast, it is all you and our nickel and dime answers. It is all hashtag Ask31. We will start with... at LA Kings Quest, do you think more players will waive their no trade, no move for Seattle expansion after seeing Vegas's success?
Yes, I think that will be part of it. I think that there will be changes in the approach. First of all, I think teams will fight against no-move clauses even more now because some of them really back themselves into a corner. Or if they get a no-move clause, will a team say the no-move clause doesn't extend to the expansion draft or something like that? I think we're going to see more battles over that. I think the other thing you're going to see is teams were so concerned about players that could lose that they made side deals. I don't think you're going to see that either. I think Seattle's going to have a more difficult time doing that unless there are teams that get them caught so badly in salary cap hell that they have no choice. But I think generally you're going to see teams say, you know what, if we can, we'll just lose a player rather than losing a player, then working to give them something else so we don't lose another specific player.
Yeah, maybe the underlying question to this question is, what have general managers around the NHL learned about the expansion draft by how Vegas was able to hit this thing out of the park?
Don't make a side deal. That's number one.
It is tempting when you want to get out of some type of salary cap hell with a contract.
Yes. So be careful what you do. And number two, try to argue against no move clauses. I think the other thing is Washington's not a no-tax state. It's a beautiful place to live. Mm-hmm. Nevada is a no-tax state. I think if you're from the West and you want to go out there, for sure.
Ask 31. This comes to us from at Clowney. What did the Flyers do this summer? Trade slash
Jadeveon Clowney from the NFL?
Since it will
great
affect
player.
Simmons, Felpola, Reed, Laterra, Manning, Moran, Sanheim, depending if D-spot opens for them on the roster or not. Could they move Gudas or McDonald?
Well, we see that Ron Hextall's a patient guy. He's a big believer in marinating, right? We marinate the players as long as we can.
It's the Detroit model, but unlike the Detroit model, who they're already at the top of the winning cycle so they could marinate guys in Grand Rapids, mm-hmm. I see the patience of Ron Hextall being more like, I'm not going to make big moves until we're closer to the top of our winning cycle here. That's when you make your moves, and I think that's wise.
Yeah,
it's painful
amazing?
Along the way, but
they were chanting fire Hextall like 3 months ago, and now they're battling for first
like
place in the
10-loss
Metropolitan. It's just funny how quickly this league changes.
Hey, listen, I mean, in Winnipeg, once upon a time, they're saying, you know, our general manager puts the day off in Cheval Dayoff.
Yeah.
He hasn't done anything, and now Cheval Dayoff's looking like one of the smartest GMs in the league.
And I think Hextall's probably cut from the same cloth. I think he likes to wait as long as he can, make sure guys are ready. And the thing is, too, now is I don't think he feels he has to do anything. I think he feels that it would be a luxury to do something. He doesn't have to do anything yet. So I think that's going to be an interesting one. You know, teams will tell you you can never have enough defensemen. Now, the travel in the East for Philly isn't as bad as, say, Edmonton or Calgary or Vancouver or San Jose or Dallas or whoever you want to pick. But, you know, I think he looks at it like I don't feel a hurry and I don't see a need to do anything. And I like to have extra D. Like, they had to call up a guy on the weekend for an emergency. So he likes the fact that his emergency call-up right now is Travis Sanheim.
Stop me if you've heard this before, but for Philadelphia, going back however many years, and for this summer as well, I would imagine has to have questions about the goaltending. And here's the question. Do they do something about it now? Do they need to do something about it? Or do they just wait for Carter Hart to be ready? Carter Hart, the best goaltender in the Canadian Hockey League, hands down. He's a Philadelphia Flyers draft pick, plays with the Everett Silvertips of the Western Hockey
League. How many
years
away do you think he is? Two, at least?
I think one, at least 1 year in the American League. At least one full year in the AHL.
See, this is a different team, but I wonder if we're going to get a bit of an idea into that with Vancouver and Demko. Like, he just played his first pro year, and I think there are people in the organization who fought to bring him up.
There was already.
And
there's
I think
already been fights about bringing Demko up.
And I think there have been people in the organization who've won so far who have fought to keep him down.
I think there's going to be that hue and cry again next season. And that's a big question for Vancouver. How many of these prospects are we willing to have on the roster right away?
And I think Dan Cloutier will fight to keep him in Utica as long as he possibly can.
Yeah.
You'll see the same thing with Carter Hart. And the other thing, too, is the Mrazek one is really interesting. He's looked better in Philadelphia.
Yep.
And the worst comes to worst. They can just qualify him for a year at $4 million if they really want to and do it that way. Now, that means they'll have a lot of money. Actually, it's not too bad on Elliott and Mrazek because he's not such a high number. But, you know, Mrazek at least gives them an option, and they're getting a free look at him right now. Mm-hmm. All you got to do is sign him to a one-year deal, qualify him, and you keep him at $4.15 million.
Going back to Vancouver quickly, because you brought it up, and this has been a debate most recently, and we saw it, you know, rage in their post-game radio show last night, listening on the way home last night.
Listening to Kenward and
Joey Kenward, baby. Oh, yeah, and Alex Auld and Corey. Oh, yeah, I love it on the way home. And their big one of their big discussions last night.
I wonder what those
guys
fight about more, the future of goaltending or who picks up the check at the end of the night.
They all have the onion wallets. When they open it, they start to cry. The question was, do they split the goaltending down the stretch now?
Oh, between Nielsen and Markstrom?
Just bop, 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 bop. Or has one earned the right to get more of the starts?
I don't know. If I know Travis, he'll just play the one he thinks gives him a better chance that night. I mean, look, I think
they've gone in on Markstrom.
Yeah, I think they've tried to trade Nielsen. I don't think they think as highly as him as they do of Markstrom. I agree with you. I think the biggest question next year is, where's the goalie? Where's Demko? Is he in Utica or is he in Vancouver?
From MV Pritchard 1, would you support, not the NHL, but would you support the NHL adopting a luxury tax system for teams? I mean, I like it because I like the idea of a traveling all-star team in the NHL, a traveling measuring stick team, a New York Yankees, if you will. I think that does better for a sport that has not that many casual viewers in the United States. But what are your thoughts?
I would love anything that could make dynasties more possible or could do something to make good teams stay together. But there's a bunch of owners that don't want it, and there's a commissioner who speaks for those owners. He wants a hard cap. He has a league where there are haves and there are have-nots, like every other league. But there would be huge discrepancies between some of these teams if that was allowed. And I would like to see it, but I recognize that there are a lot of owners who are quietly against it, mm-hmm. and the commissioner protects their interests.
See, I love the David and Goliath story, and you so seldom get that in hockey. I mean, we sort of had one with Nashville and Chicago last year, but it really wasn't when you look at, you know, both of their records after 60 minutes of play. They're more identical than they were different when you really peel it away a little bit.
And I think it's going to get even more difficult now because the star players are going for bigger numbers. You know, it used to be Crosby 8-7. You know, Tavares at 6.5 or 5.5 or whatever he's at.
5.5.
Yeah, he's maybe the most underpaid player in the league. And you could make an argument now that Crosby at 8.7 is incredibly underpaid.
Right now. But when he signed it, what was his percentage?
It was like 19%. It was 17 or 19%. Like, right. That is the way.
When he signed it, it wasn't like, oh, wow, look at this deep discount he's given the Penguins.
No, but the thing is the cap's gone up. Like, that's what they did the McDavid deal based on, is what percentage it was. And that's the way they'll look at Matthews and everybody else. But McDavid's percentage came in right around Crosby's. And the other thing, too, is they looked at, I think Malkin and Crosby are about 25% of the Penguins cap now. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that's going to be interesting. I think now you're seeing players say, no, we want it. The star players are like, we're going to take a bit more. And I think it's going to make it even harder to build great teams.
Or do we just need to define what a great team is? I mean, listen, the Philadelphia Flyers won 2 Stanley Cups in 74-75. Do we consider them a dynasty in the 70s? I mean, the Habs, you know, ripped off 4. The Islanders ripped off 4. The Oilers went 2, lost 1, then picked up a couple more. And right now, post 205 lockout, we sort of consider Chicago to be a dynasty.
To be honest, since 2009, 4 teams have won all the Stanley Cups,
yep.
And 3 teams have won all but one of them. Pittsburgh's won 3.
Yep.
Chicago's won 3.
LA's
Kings
won
2. And Boston is the outlier. They won the 1.
And Boston went to a final as well.
So even if you're saying that we have parity, which I think we do, like there's a lot of teams you never know from beginning to 1 year to the end where they're going to be. But the fact is we do have kind of dynasties. Mm-hmm. And Pittsburgh, now they got Derek Brassard, how many people think they're going to win again?
They got a legit chance as anybody else in the East. Steve Poland, this is an interesting one. Do hockey players swap jerseys like football players do? Sounded like from your episode with Kyle Turris, he has a lot of jerseys, but he doesn't really mention current players. Is that a thing? I know players do ask for memorabilia and equipment from other players. Ryan Leslie on the Flames broadcast was mentioning the other day that Crosby asked for one of Johnny Gaudreau's sticks. I don't know if Crosby does that with other players or a lot of players. I know a lot of players. And
did you see the Ovechkin story in the Washington Post?
No.
Isabel Hershudian did a great story on Ovechkin and the amount of stuff that he keeps from other people.
From other players?
Yeah, and he asked for a lot of stuff. I remember when Gretzky was retiring, one of the ways that people were tipped off that something was going on.
He's bringing like a dozen sticks to every game?
Well, and how many times he was changing during games.
Changing jerseys.
Sticks. And jerseys.
I think jerseys as well.
Probably. I didn't hear jerseys, but it wouldn't surprise me. I think that that kind of thing happens a lot more than we realize. Guys doing the All-Star games, they constantly are asking for other people to sign.
Mm-hmm.
Sign my jersey, sign my stick, sign this, sign that. I do believe that guys are a lot more interested in that than we realize.
And not just players, but officials as well. You know, the great Ray Scampanello story. You know the hockey stick story, Scampi?
What did he do?
It's hilarious. So during his career, Ray Scampanello, one of the great linesmen in the history of the NHL, you knew it was a big game when Scampanello and D'Amico were working the lines. And they worked a lot of Hockey Night in Canada games on Saturday. Those were, you know, two of the elite-level linesmen in the NHL at their time. Now, what Scampanello would do, he writes about this in his book, which is a really good read, too.
Mm-hmm.
He talks about how he would ask for hockey sticks all the time. And so he had this collection. I mean, it was like Wayne and Mario and Espo and like, you know, high-end Gilbert Perreault, like high-end players, right?
Yes.
And all autographed. And he would take them at the end of the year to his parents' house in Guelph, Ontario, and leave them there in his parents' garage. And at the end of his career, he tells the story of how he went to go and collect up all of his sticks, and he went to his parents' garage, and they weren't there. And he went and asked his mom, he said, Mom, where's all the hockey sticks? She said, they're in the backyard. He said, what do you mean? I just went in the garage. And he goes, no, they're in the backyard. And what his parents had done is cut all of them and was using them for the tomatoes in the backyard, which instantly became the most expensive pasta sauce in the history of the NHL because they were all grown. All the vines were grown on sticks from Wayne Gretzky, Mario Lemieux, Steve Yzerman, Phil Esposito, Bobby Orr, et cetera. So, yeah, I think that I think all players do it, and I think officials do as well.
Well, when I covered baseball, that became a big problem because I remember the Blue Jays, if I remember correctly, the Blue Jays had an umpire, and I better not say who the umpire was in case he listens to this and sues me if it's not true. But David Wells had a problem with one particular umpire and had a confrontation, like a yelling match with him during the game. And afterwards, the Blue Jays told me that the reason that David Wells and this umpire had issues was because David Wells wouldn't sign stuff that this umpire could sell.
Really?
Yes. And as a matter of fact, the Jays told me that it was a big problem in the sport. It was an impossible story to prove. Like, it was impossible to prove. You couldn't prove it.
Yeah.
But they told me that this umpire had asked David Wells for something, and David Wells didn't like this umpire, or he was just being David Wells. He could be a different guy on
different
days.
And so he wasn't getting the strikes. He wasn't getting the corners of the plate.
And so he said, no, I'm not doing it. And he felt he was getting squeezed by this ump because he wasn't doing it.
You know what? Now that you mention that, and, you know, I think it's all innocent. I think back, you know, an official asking a player for a hockey stick. Geez, you know what? When you put it in that light, if you're the player, what are you going to do?
You better say,
you got it, guy.
Can I give you 5 sticks? Now,
you know what? I should really have that second assist on that goal, right?
But it goes the other way. Like, I remember when I covered the NBA, I once saw Michael Jordan at a bar. Mm-hmm. I was going out. They were in town to play the Raptors on a Sunday, and I went out Saturday night, and he happened to be at a bar that I was at, and he was roped off from the rest of us. Nobody was going anywhere near him. But the next day, I laughed because the referees came running onto the court, and one of them had been out with Jordan the night before. I was like, oh, Raptors aren't getting any calls here.
Guessing you have to pick up for that one. Oh, by the way, I want to mention here, before I take a quick pause, the person who got to me about the Brent Johnson story, at KJBomber34, thank you, K-Bomb.
Thank you, Bomber.
Along. Thank
is that
you.
Paul Bromby, the Bomber?
No, but Paul Bromby, just so you know.
Yeah, he's been really whining in the last week.
Well, I do a lot with Bomber, and I guess you do when you do Maple Leaf games with Paul Bromby.
I haven't done one in a while, so I forgot.
He was a little sour that we had Matt Marstrom and Brian Spear on.
Well, Bomber's not
that
very
big time.
He's not very insightful, so I don't think that we lost any.
Sorry, I apologize.
Sorry, Bomber. Paul.
Yeah, I worked
maybe,
with him
maybe next year.
Worked with him the last couple of days.
He was giving it to you, right?
Yeah, he's sucking a lemon on it a little bit. That's okay. More hashtag Ask31 in a moment. The all-new 2018 GMC Terrain is the compact SUV thoughtfully designed with you in mind. With features like the traction select system to revolutionize how you adapt to the road, a fold flat front passenger seat to give you up to 8 feet of cargo space, and an innovative electronic precision shift system to make shifting easier than ever, the 2018 GMC Terrain is truly mighty like a pro. GMC, we are professional grade. Okay, so hashtag Ask31 continues. Thanks for putting up with us on this unique edition of the 31 Thoughts podcast. Okay, here's one. I get this. I'm sure you've been asked this one a lot. First of all, great Twitter handle, @FatDad69. Nice one. What's the best all-time name in hockey? Example, Peanuts O'Flaherty, also best nickname.
Ugh.
I mean, the one that people always go to is George Vezina, Shakutami Cucumber. Although I have a hard time believing
anyone... I don't know how many people now go to that one.
Anyone would actually call him, hey, Shakutami Cucumber. I guess people had more time. As we talked about the speed of life.
I'm not a big nickname guy.
What about your favorite NHL name?
Jesus.
See, one that I always liked? I've got a couple. I mean, Zarly Zalapsky was one that just rolls off your tongue. And yeah. That was always a lot of fun to say. I always had a soft spot in my heart, and I liked him as a player. Man, he was tough. Was Larry Playfair. Just having a tough guy in the NHL whose last name was Playfair, I always loved.
You know what? That kind of brought one back to me.
What's that?
I always loved Jerry King Kong Korab.
Oh, tough, tough defense. Yeah. Vancouver, also, growing Buffalo.
Growing up in Toronto, you got the Buffalo games on the local NBC affiliate when I was growing up, and Sabres were pretty good, and Korab would just go beat the hell out of somebody, and you really liked that.
Speaking of Jerry Korab, if you want a surreal hockey moment, and I can never imagine this happening today, Jerry Korab, you can go find this on YouTube, Jerry Korab was a guest on, I'm a big fan of Sven Gulli, loved Sven Gulli, made an appearance on Screaming Yellow Theater, which is one of the more surreal shows you will ever see. I'm going to leave it at that, but just have a look at Jerry Korab on Screaming Yellow Theater. If you're a Sven Gulli fan, you know exactly what I'm talking about. You know what? Jordan Tutu was great. Jordan Tutu's name is great. You know why? A, Tutu's a cool name.
Yes.
And two, he was born on February 2nd.
Groundhog Day?
Tutu.
Oh.
Jordan Tutu was born on February. I always thought that was amazing.
That's very good. That's I got to tell you, like, this is stuff like I never, like, you talked about the uniforms. I never think about the uniforms.
You think about important stuff, dude.
No, but you think about stuff I think more fans think about. I always remembered King Kong Korab as a kid. There was a guy in.
Like a good Dave Snuggerud.
Dave Snuggerud was a great name. That was a great name.
There have been some beauties along the way. Okay, so we'll turn the page on that
one. Some of the nicknames I've heard for people I can't say publicly.
So. Well, now it's you just add a Y to it, or if your last name is Campbell, you all of a sudden become Soupy. Right? Hey, Soupy. Hey, Soup. I mean, Cassie gets that.
Yeah.
Got that all the time. Okay, from Scott Williamson. Okay, enough of the frivolity. Here's a real question, so it'll go to you. All we ever hear is that players hate escrow. My understanding is it's necessary with a salary cap and a 50-50 sharing.
Yes.
Is anyone giving any useful alternatives, and are there any?
I can tell you this. I have researched this before because the NBA one is capped, and that is one place where the league outmaneuvered the Players Association last time. The NBA is capped at 9%. It can't go any higher than that. However, what the NBA does is that if it ever goes over 9%, they have to make it up on either benefits or next season's salary cap. There's a mechanism to protect
it. So then that cap goes down commensurate.
Or it comes out of your benefits. Now, I don't think that's ever happened in the NBA. The last I checked, it had never happened. Now, in the NHL, when escrow was set at 22% once, that could have led to a big fallback. But there are mechanisms in the NBA where it's capped, but you have to get it somewhere. And all I know is that the next time this happens, there's going to be a huge battle over it, which is probably why we get another work stoppage, which is what I'm really thrilled about.
Oh, yay. Hey, 2020, just in time for Seattle. Connor McMatthews. That's a good one. That's a great name. Connor @DanglesMC. That's good.
David McConnor.
Who is? Yeah, I like that one.
Yeah, that was very good.
Sam Gagner. Hey, you got to see this guy, David O'Connor. Who is most likely to go out of Edmonton, Klefbom or Nugent Hopkins? You talked about Klefbom last podcast, and teams having a peak.
It's a tough one. And the reason I say it's a tough one is because both play valuable positions. Like, one's a center and one a D. What is everybody looking for? Center and D.
Center and D.
So I think they both have an attractiveness about them. The only reason I would say Klefbom more likely is that I think if you look at them, they've got Nurse, they've got Sakara, they've got Larson, they've got Russell signed. I think they feel they've probably got enough D that they can get by. If they can get...
It's a D-heavy draft. We'll take a defense position, right, most likely.
If they can get Draisaitl and McDavid comfortable playing a part, you probably don't have the luxury of keeping Nugent Hopkins' cap number. But if you really want to play them together, mm-hmm, you probably need Nugent Hopkins. Like, I think that they have to get those – they have to convince those two guys to play a part. I really do. I think you look at Pittsburgh, the team that we watched in Toronto on the weekend. Why do they win Stanley Cups? Because they got Crosby on one line, Malkin on the second line, Kessel on the third line with Brassard, and you can't handle them. I think ultimately those two guys are going to have to play a part. And for that reason, it might be just Nugent Hopkins might just not be a luxury that you can afford in a cap.
Does it go to the idea that, or the question that, is hockey a weak link or strong link game? I.e., is your, we'll focus on forwards first, is the forward line defined by the best player or the worst player? And is the D pairing defined by the best defenseman or the worst defenseman of that pair? I don't know the answer to that. My suspicion is it's a strong link game. But I have nothing to back that up on other than that's just how I feel about it.
You know, I think if you look at it, Jeff, I really believe that Pittsburgh has proven it's a strong link game. And that's the way I feel. And you know what? Like, I hate saying guys are bad because I think...
it's relative. That's right. Yeah,
like, I'm watching Darren Archibald score last week, and I'm like...
In his one move.
But you know what?
It's a good move.
It's a good move.
And he said he got from Joffrey Lupo.
And it takes a lot to get that... It takes a lot to pull off that move in a game.
Yeah.
But, like, the thing is, like, hey, Connor Sherry, Brian Rust, Carl Hagelin, Hornqvist, they're all smart enough to say, where do you need me to go? What do you need me to do? And I'll do it.
Specifically Hornqvist.
Yeah. Like, Hornqvist just got, what, $25 million. Connor Sherry got $11 million. Like, they're smart. They're making all this money because they're smart enough to say, Sid, where do you need me? Yeah. Evgeny, where do you need me?
Having said that, Sid's able to do that. I mean, look at Dominic Simone. I mean, yeah, he just comes up and all of them automatically.
Aston Reese looked really good.
Sid makes them better players.
And that's why I think it's a strong link game, because if you have an understanding of how to play with good players and how to complement them, mm-hmm, you can do really well.
From Arvin Yosifian, when drafting, this is a common question, when drafting, which is more important, drafting best available player or drafting to fulfill a need?
I am always a best available player guy.
Okay.
Always, 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 always.
Two stories for you.
Okay.
Memorial Cup a couple of years ago, Quebec City, the closing of the Colisée. This one, Patrick Roy was still the head coach and had very much a hand in player personnel decisions with the Colorado Avalanche. They did one big night as they're welcoming back, you know, Ramparts, and there's Patrick, and it's a big night for him. Some of the closing games at the one of the great old barns around North America. And we were talking to Patrick Roy, and this is the Memorial Cup. And we were talking about Connor Bleakley. Okay, he was a forward playing with Red Deer that the Avalanche had drafted. And Patrick Roy was not in support of this.
Mm-hmm.
And Patrick brought, I said, how come you don't like Bleakley? He said, listen, it's nothing specifically against this kid, although they did sort of butt heads at training camp. He said, we went into that draft and I told our guys, we have enough forwards. We need a defenseman. We need to start picking defensemen. And at that time, I think Marcus Pedersen, Brandon Montour may have been the next on the list of defensemen to select. But still, mm-hmm, they went with Bleakley from Red Deer. And this is the point that Patrick was making. He said, look, we're at a time right now where when you draft a player, he's pretty close to playing, specifically in the first round. He may not play the next season.
But he's getting there.
But he's getting there, and they're really close to playing. And generally, when it comes to defensemen, you know what you have by the time they're 20 or 21. So we need to start thinking more strategically. Once upon a time, was when a defenseman is not going to make it to the NHL until he's 23 or 24 years old. He's going to stay in junior and play all of his junior eligibility, and then he's going to play a couple of years in the American League. Now guys are walking in more so than ever. So we need to be strategic about how we draft. That's what I wanted our guys to do, and they didn't do it. Now, the other story I always come back – so that's one in favor of drafting for need.
Yeah.
But the other one that I always come back to is a great Chris Pronger story in the 93 draft where – and ultimately, San Jose ended up trading the pick with Hartford, and they ended up – Hartford ended up drafting Chris Pronger, a really nice move by Brian Burke. Pronger will tell the story of being interviewed by – I would imagine be Chuck Grillo would have been the general manager at that time, being interviewed by San Jose and was told, you know what, Chris, you know, if we pick second overall, we're not going to take you. We already drafted Mike Rathje.
Right.
We already drafted Ragnarsson. We already have enough big defensemen. We don't need another one. And thereby saying we're not going to draft a future Hall of Fame defenseman, one of the best defensemen of the era, just because we already have that need filled. So take your pick. Are you closer to the Chris Pronger story, or are you closer to the Patrick Waugh story? Because both have their pros and cons.
I am a big believer in you take the best player available.
I'm saying, regardless, you can have eight centermen in your organization that should be playing in the NHL, but if the best available player is a centerman, you take that centerman.
I remember the 2003 World Juniors, Marc-Andre Fleury really arrived on that stage.
Yep.
And interviewing some scouts about him. And one of the scouts I interviewed was Scott Luce, who then worked in Florida.
Now in Vegas.
And I said, you know, you have Roberto Luongo. Like, would you draft Fleury if you got that pick? And he said, I'm in the business of adding assets. Mm-hmm. The general manager will decide what he wants to do with those assets, but I believe in you take the best player. And I've always believed that for you. Like, you know, one of the hot-button ones in Vancouver is Olli Juolevi. Vancouver felt they needed more defensemen. They took Juolevi. He's still young, but you look what went around him and what went after him. Kachuk was the next pick. Sergachev was four picks later.
Charlie McAvoy a little bit later after that.
So it just shows you
Dante Fabro.
You take the best player you think. And then Vancouver did it right the other way, where I had a few other teams tell me that they had Brock Besser rated higher than anyone else, and they went and they got him. And some teams said, that's too high for that guy, and it worked out great. So I think you go for the best player, and it gives you the best chance to be successful. And if you got a lot of one thing, you can use it to go get something else.
That's an excellent point. I mean, there was a couple in the Buffalo draft, late in the first round, the Boston Bruins took Trent Frederick.
Yep.
And Trent Frederick mini had – you know, best case scenario going in the second round. And Anaheim was picking after they ended up taking Sam Steele at 30. And I asked someone from Boston, I said, wow, that's a little bit high for Frederick, don't you think? He said, maybe, but we had strong intel that Anaheim was after Frederick. They were going to take him at that spot. So in order to get the guy, did we go a little bit high? Yeah, but that's the guy we wanted. So we used a first round pick for him.
Mm-hmm.
Trevor Shackless, what do you think about a lottery where the bottom 15 teams all pick literally anywhere between first and 15th? It would completely de-incentivize tanking and make the lottery an even bigger spectacle.
Like equal odds?
That's what I want to get to. I'm a big fan of 31 balls. 31 balls,
no,
31 teams.
No,
yes. You know why? Because it's a salary cap league, Elliot.
No.
And what's
the
most exciting?
If that's the case, you might as well just make all draftees free agents.
You really think so, eh?
Yeah. There has to be – you need help for some teams that don't do well. Like, it's legit. Like, if you're going to do that, you might as well just make every draft pick a free agent.
But then you're just managing assets anyhow, and it's a salary cap league, and that's fine.
Yeah. Then that's what I would do. Say everyone's a free agent. Like, I know some teams complain – that the odds now for the worst record is only 18%.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem was, who screwed it up? It was Buffalo and Arizona that one year.
Yep.
Where they both – it was embarrassing. It's bad for your league. Look, Mark Cuban just got fined $600,000 for admitting he was tanking on a podcast, which is why he's probably not coming on this podcast. But I think that there has to be some fair – thing if you're a legitimately bad team, if you're not going to make them all free agents. But I like the fact that it's not weighted. crazily.
Let me get back to something you said about cumin. How did the NHL, I don't know what the answer is to this one, I ask legitimately. How did the NHL feel about the Rangers letter? Where essentially they said, you know what, big names are going, get used to it. We're moving on. Was that not a public admission of we're tanking?
Well, I don't think the NHL had a big problem with it, but I think some other teams did. To me,
Vancouver sent out a similar one the very next day.
Yeah, like to me, the Rangers fans loved it. At the end of the day, all the Rangers have to care about is what their fans think, mm-hmm. and their fans liked it. But other teams were like, "Oh, do we have to do that too now?" And then you're right. I forgot Vancouver did it the next day with the letter to season ticket holders.
Yeah.
And first of all, I don't like that when you only send it to season ticket holders. Maybe they should get it first, and then Vancouver put it out publicly. It got out there. But maybe season ticket holders get it first, but just because fans can't get into your building doesn't mean that they shouldn't get a letter because it's expensive. But the way I kind of look at it is if your fans like it, that's all you should care about. But I know some other teams didn't like it.
Brendan Hagen, is Tyler Seguin having the most underrated season offensively?
Yeah,
he's been great.
I think I saw somewhere last night that he's been on like 50% of their goals since the new year.
Oh, is that right?
Something like that.
Yeah, he's having a rip.
Sources say that's not bad.
He's having a rip.
You know, this year, the MVP, I have no idea where it's going to go.
To make the case for Connor McDavid.
There's...
By definition, we've had this before. Yeah. I know. You want to.
Come on.
You don't want to follow the definition. I know. I get that.
Yeah. I'm real rebellious. You know, like, I don't see that. I think history has proven, what, four guys have won the MVP when they haven't made the playoffs, and the last one was, what, 60 years ago?
It's not my fault. People can't follow the definition of the trophy each and every year. I'm not going to hang for that one. I'm saying this is the definition of the trophy.
It's not my fault, Jeff Merrick. don't blame me.
No, I'm just saying what the words say.
There's 15 guys who could win
totally
the Hart Trophy this year.
Yep.
15 guys.
And Tyler
Seguin
is one of them. And you better believe he's following the John Tavares situation very closely because he's one everyone follows next year. And what's his number going to be? And is there an internal cap at $9.5 million? Because that's what Jamie Benn has with the Dallas Stars. That'll be an interesting one to follow. Let's get to question for both of you. What is your end goal? Oh. To most, you guys are living the dream. What is something you really want to do?
Wow. Well, that's a great question.
Wow.
You know, it's funny. I was talking about this with somebody.
That from Ryan Quirk 97.
Yeah, Ryan, it was funny. I was talking about this the other day. Again, as we said earlier in the podcast, you know, this is the business we've chosen. Like, I'll tell you this. I once, a friend of my sister's, this has got to be going about 25 years ago, or maybe even about 20 years ago, she wanted to get into the sports media business. She was a big sports fan. And she goes, but I only want to work Monday to Friday, 9 to 5. And I was like, that's an X. Like, don't do it because you're not going to be happy if that's all you want. Yeah. You're not going to get a chance to do the job that you want to do. So we knew what we were getting into going into this. But I have put off a lot of things. I am not as good a golfer as I would like to be.
Is that right? I didn't know that about you.
Yeah, I was okay at one point, but my game, especially since I have a 6-year-old son now, it's really fallen off. Mm-hmm. I wanted to rediscover tennis. I was never a great tennis player, but I like it. There's going to be a point where I decide that, and maybe it's in 9 years when this deal is up, where I am going to rediscover a lot of things. And I am going to do some things that I put behind. And I have no regrets. It got me to this life, and I've gotten to see things that I never thought I would ever get a chance to see in my life. But my goals, Ryan, would be there are some things that I didn't like. I've traveled a lot more now, which I'm happy to do.
Yeah.
But there are some recreational things, skiing, tennis, golf. There's going to be coming to a point where I get back into some of that stuff. I would like to learn.
You can still do some of that stuff.
Yeah, but I don't have the time now. You've got to.
You just don't have like, okay, I can't just go like take a snowboarding vacation for a week during the winter. You can still do these things.
Well, no, but you know what? Like I've started picking up a little bit of like yoga and stuff like that.
Yep.
I had to take a break, but there are times when you come back to your phone and you know you're expected to do this job and you miss a lot of stuff. So it's not always easy to do that. Like my son is 6. He's learning how to ski. I go watch him, and I'm probably going to get on the skis and do it a little bit. But, you can't really put your heart into it. Like, Jeff, I would like to learn.
Oh, I get that. Oh, I understand that.
If I want to do something, I want to do it right. Like, one of the reasons I know I hate golfing is because I've gotten – my game has fallen apart so much, I can't stand doing anything badly.
It's funny because I'm not a golf guy, but all my friends tell me it's so relaxing, and they're so stressed when they play.
Yeah, it's not
relaxing. The most stressed out people I know.
And I'm an idiot when I play badly. Like, my buddies stopped playing with me for a while because I was such a jackass. You know what, Jeff? You know the other thing, too, is I would like to – and this is something that you know. I would like to learn a martial art.
Yeah.
Like, this is stuff that I've put away.
I did it for years. It's so rewarding.
When I get older,
so good.
I am going to catch up on some of the stuff I missed. So my goal is kind of like life goals as opposed to work goals. I've never been to the Masters. I would like to go as a spectator. Mm-hmm. I've never been to a Super Bowl, but I would like to go. I don't want to cover it. I want to go as a spectator. I've been to Olympics. I've been to World Series. I've been to just about everything else I've wanted to do. I would say the Masters and the Super Bowl as a fan are probably the last things I would want to do.
Wow.
But other than that, it's all life goals. What about you?
For me, there's a saying that I always try to follow. The best time to plant a tree was 20 years ago. The next best time is today.
Yeah.
So I always try to, and I have a really encouraging wife who's always like, yes, do it, yes, do it, yes, do it, yes, try it. So whether it's, like, just lately the gym, I've been in, like, powerlifting. For example, right? So I've always wanted to try that. And so I do things like that. But sort of big picture down the road, if I could only do one activity and get, you know, deep dive in and all about it, I'm yoga. Like, yeah. You are. If aliens, give me like a 90 minute vinyasa or a 75 minute vinyasa class and I'm a happy guy.
One of my buddies said it's hot yoga when you walk into a room.
Dude, I took Colby last year a few times. Armstrong
and
Windsor.
The sarcasm is dripping off you.
I took Armstrong and Warner a few times last year in Windsor. It's fantastic.
I really like it.
And I think they loved it too.
Yeah.
But the great overarching sort of life thing is, and you know me, Elliot, I'm a hippie, to live a life where intention and action happen almost simultaneously. And that gives you a couple of things. One, a more natural way to live and an almost karma-free life. So you don't think about something, have a long time, and then the action happens. So you're living a life where as you decide to do something, it happens simultaneously.
Yes, I live life that.
And you know what?
It's cool.
That's why I like sports. Yep. Like, honestly, like, and this is why I find – okay, I'm trying to bring this back to hockey. This is why I still play men's league every Sunday morning. This is why I still, you know, love playing hockey. And I think athletes understand this in their sports as well. It's a moment where you don't think about things and you just react to things instinctively. And you can't explain them. Your body moves through them, and the game plays you as opposed to you playing the game, which is why when you see the walk-off interview, and you've done tons of them, how many times have you asked a player, can you describe that play, and they can't?
Yeah.
Because they are not ironically removed from that moment. They are in that moment, and you can't describe it when you're in it.
The ones who could do it were golfers. They have an unbelievable memory about it.
Because you think.
Yes.
Long pause, and then you execute. To me, if I can live a life where intention and action happen at the exact same time, I'll be a happy guy.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
But good luck getting there, Jeff.
No, I think that will happen because eventually we're going to get to a point where TV throws us out, right?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, like we get into this job knowing that there's going to be the day where someone comes to us and says, you're done.
Yeah, you're done.
And the second thing is, like, first of all, when I retire and whenever that is, I am going dark on social media.
Yep, same.
I will disappear. Now, here's the thing. Will you ever write a book or an e-book by that time?
I was going to say, not a traditional book. I could probably write something online. Nothing that I would.
No, but I'm saying, are you going to write like an autobiography?
Oh, wow. I don't know that I'm important enough to.
No. I mean, that's not what I'm asking.
Because I might do one. You know, I might do one just for me and for my family.
That's fair.
I don't want to talk about it publicly, but there is something that I do that's sort of similar to that.
Okay. You can keep a journal?
Sort of.
Okay,
it's tricky.
You
no, it's.
I've just never, like memento, I'm, you tattoo yourself with all your memories.
You see all the ink I have? These are just to remind myself of events. There is something that I'm not going to talk about. There is something that I do on a regular basis that winks at what you're talking about.
When I am done, and I am done, I am going to write something about my life and my career as I remember it, and it's going to be pretty unsparing towards myself.
Yeah,
like it's going to be the things that I did right and I did wrong and what worked for me in life and what didn't. And that's it. And then when that thing is done, no one's ever going to see me again.
I could do something like that, or I could see myself doing something like that, not for publication, but something just for my family.
Yeah.
And that's it. And like
no, I'll do it publicly because I'm going to want to teach people to learn from my mistakes, what went right and what went wrong. Because I think in a lot of ways I was a real underdog to get where I got.
Yeah.
So I'm going to write that book. This is what worked and this is what didn't. And you can use the advice out there as you see fit.
It's funny because Makowitz and I always talk about the idea of doing a book based on things I've learned about media that wrestling taught me. Lessons learned from professional wrestling.
Which we don't blade.
What's that? No hard way color. Mm-hmm. That's a perfect way to end the podcast.
Yeah, let's go.
Let's
gotta
hustle.
Go work.
You got to go to work. I got to do this Saturday show with John Shannon. So on that, we'll thank you once again for the downloads. We'll be back at it a little closer to live in a couple of weeks. Thanks so much for tuning in to 31 Thoughts, the podcast. Thanks to our producer, Emil Delich, who makes us sound so tasty each and every week. And he's holding up his phone, so he wants me to read something as I conclude. Oh, hang on a second here. This is the Tyler Seguin thing you wanted me to read? This is our crack staff.
All right.
Sending me texts. Okay. Tyler Seguin, 17 goals and 29 points in 2018. That's in 28 games. There you go.
Have a great week, everyone.
Talk to you later. If you see